on the floor. Now my jewelry box froze. Fuck up bowl, fuck up stove. Counted millions in a cold. Bad bitch, booted swole. Got her on bankroll. Can't fold. Just a no. Headshot, case closed.
What is up, guys? It's Andy Frisella, and this is the show for the realists saying goodbye to the lies, the fakeness, and delusions of modern society. And welcome to motherfucking reality. As always, it's Andy, that's me, and DJ.
Hello, children.
That's him. And we're going to do Q&AF today, all right? That's where you submit the questions and we give you the answers. Now, you could submit your questions. They can be about anything. They can be about business, entrepreneurship, how to get better, what's going on in the world, whatever you want. But typically, we like to keep this show about personal development, how to get better, how to make more money, how to kick ass in life and business. So submit your questions. We can do that one of a few different ways. The first way is...
Guys, you can email those questions in to askandy@andyforsala.com.
Or you can go on YouTube in the comments section on the Q&AF episode, and you can drop your question in the comments, and we'll choose some from there as well. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the show, we have multiple shows within the show. We have Q&AF, that's what you're going to hear today, which is more personal development. And then we have CTI, which is Cruise the Internet. This is where we talk about what's going on in the world. It's a little speculation. We try to connect the dots for you. We make some jokes. It's society and culture, and you know, we try to figure out what's going on. And you might ask, why do we have both of those in the same show? Because the reality is you have to know what's going on in the world to protect the environment for your ability to make money, okay? You can't just go out and think, I'm going to focus on myself, I'm going to make all this money, I'm going to build a business, I'm going to be successful, and ignore what's going on in the world. That's why we are in this position. So we have to know both. It's peanut butter and jelly, all right? So CTI and Q&AF are the meat of what we do here. And then we have Real Talk. Real Talk is 520 minutes of real talk, things I think you need to hear. And then we have 75 Hard Verses. 75 Hard Verses, where people who have completed the 75 Hard program come on the show. They talk about how their life was a dumpster fire and how they fixed it using the 75 Hard program. If you're unfamiliar with 75 Hard, it is the initial phase of the Live Hard program, which is available for free at episode 208. It is the world's most popular mental recalibration program. Again, it is free at episode 208 on the audio feed, and there is a book on my website called The Book on Mental Toughness. That's at andyforsella.com. You can get that book. It's not required, but that book will give you the entire Live Hard program, plus 10 chapters on mental toughness, why you need it, how to build it, how it'll affect your life, plus case studies on some very famous people about how they develop mental toughness and what it's done for them. So we have this thing called the fee. The fee is very simple. I don't ask for any money. I just ask that you support my companies, which a lot of you do, and I'm very appreciative for. And I ask very simply that you help us share the show. You're going to notice I don't run ads on the show. I don't spend 30 minutes talking about shit that I don't use. I don't want to answer to any other people and what they think I should and shouldn't say. I finance the show myself. As far as I know, I'm one of the only top podcasts that actually does that. And I ask very simply for something in return, and that's this. Share the show, okay? We're constantly battling censorship, traffic bans, throttling, and we don't get the message out unless you share it. So... when we say pay the fee, that's what we mean. Don't be a hoe.
Share the show.
So anyway, what do you got?
Well, let's deliver some heat. We got some great questions here, guys. Andy, question number one. Andy, I owe you a huge thanks, but I want to preface this with the admission that I have not yet completed 75 Hard. Recently, I was on my second attempt of 75 Hard, and it felt totally different that time. I woke up every day with purpose and desire to accomplish every task. I was kicking ass and was just short of halfway through at the 35-day mark when I had a spinal injury flare-up during a workout that totally froze me and forced me back to the hospital. I had surgery on this area before, and it's been a pain to get back to normal. I still made awesome progress before that setback, but today I restart the program on day one. I've already read the 75 Hard book, among others, and enjoy listening to every podcast. My question is, how do you find the fortitude to keep pushing and driving forward even when you have significant setbacks, either medically or in other area? As someone that has survived a stabbing and endured some of the gastrointestinal issues you've talked about on the show, I think your input here is very valuable, and I'm confident that there are other people out there just like me. Thanks to you and your team, and I hope in the future I'll be on the show for one of those 75 Hard testimonies. Fortitude. How do we do it?
What else you gonna do? Quit? What else you gonna do, man? Go back and be a fat fuck sit around and do nothing, be nothing, contribute to nothing, become nothing, build nothing? Is that, because that's the other alternative. I'm just not willing to accept that as my reality. That's it. It's that simple. I have no choice. This is about understanding what zero options mentality means. What it means is I don't have a choice, and you don't have a choice either. You think you do, but you don't. And what you're going to find out is that when you're 35, 40, 50 years old, you're going to figure out that you didn't have a choice and you didn't take the right choice. Okay. And the right choice is you can either go out and build your dreams, go through all the hard shit, get knocked down a million times, get punched in the face a million times, get told your shit by everybody that you love and everybody that's around you, get made fun of, get laughed at, get picked on, become the joke and continue to move forward. And then build your dreams and let your life speak for itself. That's your one choice. Or the other choice is you can quit and you could be worse than what you were when you started trying to be better, because that's what happens when you quit. You don't maintain, you get worse and worse and worse. So it's a simple question is, what are you willing to accept for yourself? Are you willing to accept not only where you are now, but much worse for the rest of your life? Or are you willing to accept all the hard things that come with pursuing your highest potential and purpose on this planet? That's really it. Yeah. Okay. These last 2 years, 2.5 years for me, have been the hardest years of my life. Not because of business, but because of things I had going on. I had a massive shoulder injury that took total reconstruction of my shoulder. It took me literally 2 years to get through an actual workout the right way. 2 years. I was in the best shape of my life when I got hurt. During that time, I got off antidepressants. I went through a year worth of withdrawal. I got sick twice that required me to like legitimately get real medical attention. On the second, it was January, and then the next January. And this past January, I got so fucking sick that I was shitting massive amounts of blood, and they found 2 bleeding polyps and a massive ulcer in my stomach, which I'd been dealing with for 4 years, which had my gut linings totally irritated, so I couldn't absorb any of my nutrients. And it also had me in a fight or flight 24 hours a day dealing with massive anxiety. I thought I was going crazy for the last 3 fucking years. But you know what? What did I do during that time? I got up every day. I stayed in pretty good shape. I didn't get fat, even though I really couldn't lift. I fucking did almost a year straight of rucking. I got to 348 days. You see what I'm saying? Like, it. You got to get up. You got to get up every day, and you got to go hard at it. And that's that. So ask yourself, what choice do you have? Because you really don't have one.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting thing, man. Like, you know, this perception of you have all the options, or, you know, this choose now is like, I'm going to choose my hard or choose my easy now, man. It can really fuck a lot of people up.
It fucks everybody up.
Yeah.
That fucks everybody up, because everybody believes that at some point in time, they're going to turn it on, or some point in time, they're going to catch momentum, or some point in time, they're going to become what it is they want to become just by circumstance or by default or by breathing the air. That's not what it takes, bro. People who think that get to the end of their life and they're like, fuck, I wasted my life. Okay, that's what they end up thinking. And there's really nothing worse than that. There's nothing worse than getting to the end of your life and saying, damn, dude, I didn't even really try. You know, and that's where you're headed if you don't go. So, you know, that's how you do it. You build it because you don't have a choice. You do not have a choice. Life is never going to be easy. It's never going to be quick. It's never going to be fast. You're always going to have obstacles. You're always going to have hardships. You're always going to be frustrated in certain things. Barely, you're going to have one great day for every 10 days that are hard. That's reality. And you're going to have to learn how to operate when things get hard. That's it. You know, most people spend their entire lives wishing shit was easy, wishing it was fair. It's not fucking fair. Wishing it was, you know, it would line up to be perfect for them. And because they're waiting for this and because it's never coming, they never go. And when they never go, they never become anything. And that's what leads to a wasted life. So you have to realize conditions are never going to be perfect. Things are always going to be hard. The only hope that you have is to become someone who can push through that hard regardless of what the fuck is going on. And if you can build that level of discipline, that level of mental toughness to execute when things are not ideal, when things are extremely hard, nothing can stop you on your journey to becoming whatever it is you're trying to become. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I love that, man. I love that. Guys, Andy, question number two. Let's keep this moving. Good morning, Andy. I've been working for a company for 4 years now. I've gotten really close to all of my coworkers over the years. I've recently been promoted to a management, and I've now lost a lot of those close people due to me doing my job. What's the best way to go about this?
To go about what?
I guess managing your old friends. Like, I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah, how do you handle that?
Well, first of all, is it a bad thing that they're not there? I mean, I would ask myself that first. Is it bad that they're not on the team? Were they pulling their weight? Were they carrying the water? Were they chopping fucking wood with you? Or were they sitting around waiting to be pulled along down the path? So I'd first evaluate, is it a good thing or a bad thing that they're not there? Secondly, how you behave dictates how you manage people that you are quote unquote friends with. And it's very easy to manage people. I think people make way too much of this. In it's like something they hear, you know, never go into business with your friends, yeah. Never manage your friends, never work with your friends, never do this. It's always gets fucked up. Yeah. Sometimes it does, but I don't know. Like my brothers, I work with Chris, who's pretty much my brother. We might beat the fuck out of each other sometimes.
Every now and then.
Yeah, but, you know, it is what it is. Yeah. I think I'm pretty good friends with a lot of the guys that I work with and a lot of the guys that I manage. And I think the guys I work with is the perspective that you should take. Like, you're not their fucking quote-unquote boss. You're just part of the team. And your part of the team is to lead the team. And if you start managing these people like that, instead of saying, do what I say or else, it gets to be a cohesive atmosphere pretty quick. And then also, when people manage their friends, they tend to get on this power trip and they try to manage those relationships the same way in a social atmosphere. You know, when they go out to eat or go out to a bar, they still like try to posture and make themselves feel like they're more important over people that are supposed to be their friends. And, you know, you have to understand, yeah, you might be the leader at work. You might be the team captain. You might be the manager. But like when you go out and social, you should be friends. And it shouldn't be, you shouldn't be posturing and you shouldn't be insecure and you shouldn't be trying to flex your leadership muscle on your friends when you're hanging out with them. And so having that balance is important if you're going to like the people you work with. And I actually think that when you have that balance and you do that play properly, it creates a tighter bond on the team anyway. Yeah. You know, people know that work is work and friends is friends. And when you can identify work is work and friends is friends, it usually works pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of times where I have to get on people that I'm friends with and say, hey, what the fuck, dude? I've had to do that to you a bunch of times, right? Yeah. But
well, not a bunch of times. I mean,
you know. Well, I mean, you know, it's been 4 or 5 years. I mean, a few times, right?
Not once, yeah.
Yeah, okay, once. But the point is I don't make it personal.
No, it's not personal.
Yeah, it's not.
You
it's
can't
not,
make it personal.
Yeah, it's not personal. It's, hey, you're not doing your fucking job right.
Yeah.
It's, hey, man, you got to get better here. You got to be better here. This is where I need you to be. That, like, dude, I think this is like internet bullshit. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of this is just people who read shit on the internet or hear shit from people like moms or dads, their teachers, that people who are not qualified to give advice on this subject. You know, if somebody isn't managing a good amount of people, and I'm not talking one or two people, I'm talking like a good amount of people, and they don't have years of experience leading teams and building culture and accomplishing things with those teams, a record of winning, they really shouldn't be given advice on who to work with and who not to work with because they don't know.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of that going around, you know, like, dude, remember like all your broke friends and your relatives, and they tell you that money doesn't really matter when money matters a lot, right? Like, this is just,
need it to matter.
Yeah, this is just them voicing bullshit that they really don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and something else that we talk about a lot is, you know, this, the difference between, you know, there's book smarts and then there's practical application, right?
Yeah.
And when we talk about leadership or being in some type of management position, right? If we go back to when, you know, it was just you and Chris, right? And then you expanded to 6 stores. You're actually leading some people now, right? What were some mistakes that you feel like looking back now, like being aware of it, that you made in that initial move in leadership?
All that shit I just said not to do. I did all that. Mm. That's how I know not to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. I was insecure. I wasn't comfortable in my ability to lead. I didn't think anybody would listen to me. So I went extra hard on people. And then when we were, you know, hanging out, I made it known that I was the leader. Like, dude, I was a fucking, it was terrible. Mm. I was terrible. So I made all the mistakes. That's how I know what not to do.
Yeah.
You know, so all of these things that I'm telling you not to be like, I was. And I learned over time, you know, how to do it the right way yeah. through experience.
Yeah.
And by the way, that becoming a great leader, manager is a lifelong project. If I don't look back 10 years from now and say, hey, dude, you were a shitty leader in 2024, I didn't make enough growth. I didn't make enough progress. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a lifelong project.
Yeah. And then so on this, you know, you mentioned this, you got to be able to work is work, play is play, for example, right? Especially when it comes to your who you're leading. Is there a point that somebody can get in a management position where it's all play, no work? Or they're trying to be too much of friends? Like, I mean, what's the...
Oh, yeah.
What, can we talk, like, just talk
yeah,
about this a little
bit?
Especially
happens,
for somebody that's just getting into a management position.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Like, you have people that you're friends with who are outside, outside of the office space or the work atmosphere, your friends. And inside, they try to use that to their advantage, to take advantage and get away with less work. But that comes down to you holding the line and the standard. That's what a leader does. So when you see that, you have to stop that and you have to say, hey, out there is one thing. In here is a different thing.
Yeah.
Okay. In here, we're on a team. We're trying to accomplish a mission. We got to do this. And I need you to do this. This is your part of the mission. If you don't do this, we're going to have problems.
Yeah.
Okay. But this is what needs to happen here. Out there, it's a different story, bro. And I feel like you're using out there as an excuse to get away with shit in here. And that's disrespectful to me. And it's disrespectful to the team. Don't you understand that? Yeah. And they're going to say, yeah, bro, I get it.
My bad, man.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Or they're going to fucking argue with you. And if they argue with you and they're really doing that, then it's probably one of those situations where, like I said in the beginning, it's probably a good idea they're not on the team, right?
Yeah. I think most times too, man, it's like people have a hard time understanding what the consequences of not holding that line in those small situations, right? What implications it has, you know, on the big aspect of things when you talk about culture, like what are the other employees seeing that may not be in that little clique, right? Like, and so because people have a hard time seeing or foreseeing the future consequences of these small decisions today, they tend to let that shit slide.
That's right. But they don't think of, like you said, the other employees seeing it.
Yeah.
And saying, well, fuck, if he doesn't have to do that, I don't have to do that.
Yep.
And then in a year, you got a big culture problem because yep. there's no standards at all and everybody's just doing whatever they want.
Yeah.
So it's very important that when you see corrections, that you make the corrections on the spot consistently and hold that line consistently across the team, not just for your friends, but yeah. the people that may not be your friends too. The line has to be the same for everybody. And it has to be real, and everybody has to know where it is. And if you don't have that, you're going to have chaos in the workplace. And at the very least, you're going to be unproductive. And in worst case scenario, you're going to have a totally ineffective team.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Fucking mutiny.
Yeah, right. So it's very, very, very important to identify when corrections get made, hold them accountable, and then basically, you know, when you have someone who's supposed to be your friend, you know, shouldn't they build you up? Shouldn't they be doing an extra good job? Shouldn't they be setting an example for you as the leader? Because then they understand that it makes your job easier to lead everybody else. See, if somebody was really your fucking friend, that's how they would behave. They would do extra. They would be the best. They would hold the highest standard. And then they would say, hey, man, I'm trying to help you out. You know, by setting this, they would understand you and them as friends are working as a team to accomplish this mission. And their role is to actually be better than everybody else, not take advantage of it. If they take advantage of it, bro, they're just simply not your friend. Yeah. Those people will bail on you the minute shit gets hard in your life.
It's real shit, man. Well, good luck to you in your new management position. Hope all goes well for you. Guys, Andy, our third and final question. I saw this. I had to ask it because of who's like, and it's not the same person. We're going to start with that. Okay. Hey, Andy, my name is Micah. And the subject was actually your favorite light skin. I thought this was Micah at first, but it's not. But okay, question number three. Hey, Andy, my name is Micah. I'm 29 years old, and I've been a youth basketball coach and trainer for almost 4 years. I swear I thought this was the same person. I swear. I don't think Micah's that good at basketball, though. I don't think he's that good. No, he's not.
Is he not?
No, he's not. Yeah, so definitely not the same person. but I played college basketball until I was 22 and received an opportunity to be an entrepreneur for my current company. I currently have three jobs, provide for my family. All three jobs are under the same umbrella, thank God. The shit is hard, but being able to give my sons a better life, a life that I never had, is a goal, and I'm determined to bring that to pass. I am in a tough industry, but I feel like it is watered down with a lot of coaches or trainers not being the example for the youth and leading by example. AAU is so wild and dysfunctional at times, and we lack really good development of our youth on and off the floor, which I feel is a requirement to be a coach for youth. If you are not looking to impact those young boys and girls, then what the hell are you doing it for? My question for you is, how would you go about being the best motherfucker youth development coach in the nation? Because that's what I want to be known for. I currently train 8-year-olds to 22-year-olds, and I want to help be a solution to our decaying society and help develop amazing men and women. Thank you for paving the way. Hashtag real ass fan. Hashtag your favorite light skin.
I mean, look, dude, what you're trying to do is the exact same thing I'm trying to do with society. Okay. It's a cultural change. Cultural change dictates the outcome of the individual as they live through the program or life or whatever. Okay. So you have to decide very simply, what are the values you're trying to instill? What is the mission that you're trying to accomplish? You have to make those values known. You have to make that mission known consistently. Those values should be plastered everywhere. They should be every freaking person in your camp. Every player should understand what they mean, should understand that you're serious about operating with those values. And they should understand that if they don't operate with those values, they're not going to be in the program. And if you build the program around an intentional culture like that, and what that means for you is that means they're going to have to understand what it is. And this could be a 10-hour talk, by the way. Okay. I'm giving this to you in a few minutes. So I'm summarizing everything. But what it means for you is that you're going to have to make these values known. You're going to have to teach these values. You're going to have to coach on these values. You're going to have to hold the standard around these values. And most importantly, you're going to have to communicate corrections with these values, which means when these kids do not live or do not do something on the court and they don't live by the value, you're going to have to stop them and say something like this. Hey, I know you messed up there, but I'm not really upset about the mess up. I'm upset about how you reacted to the mess up. What core value does that violate? And they're going to say, well, that violates being a positive teammate or whatever it is you decide to put in, right? And you're going to say, yeah, now give me fucking 5 laps, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you're going to bring them back in and say, all right, look, dude, I don't want to see that shit no more. And that's what I mean by communicating corrections, okay, in the terms of cultural values. And so if you could do all those things, especially communicate your corrections in the terms of what the values are, eventually the culture will come alive in your program. And the other kids will live and breathe the culture so much that any new kids that come in will automatically adapt to it. And you'll accomplish what it is you're trying to accomplish. But none of this happens overnight. None of this happens in a week. This takes a long time to instill. It takes a lot of consistency from the leader who is installing the culture intentionally. And it takes consistency on all of those things. Making it known, communicating, holding the line, all in terms of what the value system actually is. So my question back to you would be, what are the values you're trying to instill in these kids? And I would pick 8 to 10 of those values. I would write a paragraph definition for each. I would make all the kids know them. And that would be my fundamental, like, requirement to even be in the program. You have to know what these values are. And then when they come in, We start to coach. You coach on the actual techniques, but you also coach on the character through the value system. Yeah. And then you do that over the course of time, and eventually you end up with what you're trying to do.
Yeah, dude, I think coaches are super, like, super important, especially, I mean, you're coaching young, moldable minds, you know? And so, like, I mean, we talk about this stuff on CTI. We know what it happens the other way, right? But being in that position, man, is super important. Andy, like, I mean, I remember my favorite coaches, right? And it's funny because, like, during that time, I always hated them.
Yeah.
But now looking back, I love them. And I don't know if that's, like, the right approach. I don't know if they were being too hard. But, like, you get older, you realize, no, that's exactly what I needed, right?
Yeah.
Can you who was your most memorable coach you've had? You played all the fucking sports growing up.
Yeah.
Right? Do you have the most memorable or one that still, like, makes you, you know, tremble a little bit when you say your name?
No, not really. I had a lot of pretty I had some bad coaches, but I had some good coaches too. My best coach was my dad.
Okay.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, my dad was very involved in our athletics. He didn't coach the team, so to speak. When we were in Little League, he did and shit. But, you know, after practice, after the games, he'd always break it down with us in a real way, tell us the truth, tell us where we were good, where we were bad. And we didn't always like it, but he always held a standard. You know, he'd tell us if we weren't hustling. He'd tell us if we were being lazy. He'd tell us if we were being weak, if we weren't being aggressive. Or he would tell us the good things. Hey, you did this right. You did that right. You did this right. And he would just give the breakdown, and that was what we needed. And he would hold that standard. You know, if we didn't play well, you know, we knew we didn't play well. And, like, you know, nowadays, you know, parents all cry about that. Oh, you're being too hard on the kid. Well, I don't know. I turned out pretty decent. I might, you know, like, you know, I'm just saying, if you want your kids to turn out, you know, you got to hold a standard. Yeah. So outside of that, though, because I know that wasn't the answer you're looking for, I had a coach named Mike Loyette at Vianney. Mm-hmm. And he went on to be the president of Vianney. And I think he's retired now. But in terms of character building, he was the best coach I had. I don't know that he was the best coach technique-wise or anything like that.
Yeah. On the field, yeah.
But in character building, he always led with character building. And I was kind of a shithead back in high school. I was stubborn. I wanted to do things my way, which is probably why I'm an entrepreneur. And that's just real shit.
Yeah.
I know I was a handful, but he always treated me fair. He always held the line. He let me know when I was out of line character-wise. You know, a couple times I messed up really bad where I could have probably gotten kicked out of school. And in those times, he believed in me and cut me a break. And I'm very, very grateful for having him as a coach.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the things I learned from him, even though I didn't like them at the time, I have, you know, started to use in my life today. Oh. So very grateful for that man. And, you know, I'm sure he probably doesn't appreciate how much I curse, you know, but I think he did a really good job.
Yeah.
And I'm proud to and grateful to have known him.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
All right. A little special sauce. Andy, question number four.
Yeah. We're going to do a little extra.
A little special sauce.
A little extra smoke.
Yeah. All right, guys, Andy, question number four. Hey, Andy, I am 21 years old. I was wondering what your take is on relationships and dating. I've heard a scary statistic that 50% of men are not even looking for anything casual with a woman from ages 18 to 30, which is really quite scary. I myself and a lot of my friends, all of whom are very popular, tall, not weird by any means, we're all struggling with dating. I know this is not directly related to business, but I find it important to have a good relationship with the opposite sex for many reasons: purpose, connection, motivation, etc. I recently went on a few dates with a girl who she considered herself to be a boss bitch. She is 22 and in sales and is doing really well. While right now I am grinding on growing my income in several ways, after a couple of dates, I was told she did not think we were compatible enough. I told her my situation and my vision and where I wanted to be. However, I feel it was not taken seriously and I was ghosted. I take it as if I don't make enough money to be taken seriously from her. Should I not pursue relationships right now and focus on myself and my income? I was wondering what your tips are for attracting and retaining attractive women in a relationship these days. Is it even worth it in your view?
Look, dude. I'm not some sort of relationship expert, so I don't come on here and pretend like I know shit that I don't really know. All right, relationships are fucking weird. People are weird. Bitches be crazy. All that shit. All right. Here's the reality. Dudes be crazy too.
Yeah.
Okay. But here's the truth. All right. You need as little distraction as possible when you're building your life. Okay. Women, when they're young and attractive, get attention from older men, and older men tend to have more things going on than you have because you're younger. And if you take the time and you take the opportunity to improve your life, improve your skill set, and build a life, what will happen is your selection of potential mates will become better. Okay. You will start to increase your ability to attract someone who would fit with the life that you're building. You're not going to be able to do that at 21 years old because, real talk, you don't have the ability to have a life. You're not secure. You're not financially secure. Any relationship you have right now is likely purely for sex. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's be real. You sitting here talking about purpose, connection. You ain't fooling nobody, motherfucker.
Trying to bust a nut.
Yeah, right. You're trying to fucking get it wet, dude.
You're right.
All right. And the more you, and I'm not saying you can't date.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm not saying you can't, but just know that if you spend your time in bad relationships that take your energy and, you know, pull you away from what you're trying to accomplish, you're just delaying the eventual result you're trying to get to, which is by the time you're 30, you're in a great spot, or the time you're 35, you're in a great spot. And then you can have your choice of the available dating pool. Okay. That's the way it works. Women tend to have beauty and youth, and men tend to have money and resources. And that's what women look for. Not all the time, but it's kind of like something that they
want to feel secure.
Yes.
They want the financial security for sure.
And men, you know, tend to look for an attractive woman who suits and supports them and pushes them to be better.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's hard to find when you're 21 years old and you don't have the basic requirements that women are interested in. Mm-hmm. And so what's going to happen is, this is just reality, is you're probably going to date a whole bunch of girls through your 20s. They're going to treat you like shit. You're going to continue to work. You're going to continue to build. You're going to become successful. And then they're going to start treating you different. Okay. Because now you're an anomaly. Now you're standing out amongst the men, and you're attractive to them at that point. And you're going to say, well, they, you know, people will say, well, they only like you because of your money. No shit, bro. That's why I did all the fucking work. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what to tell you, you know? And, you know, there's obviously more than that. You want, you know, compatible connection, support of each other, you know, having the same nature, you know, understanding that each other's lifestyles, what they need, what they want, because dude, this is a partnership. It's not all about like the lovey-dovey feelings that everybody thinks it's about. You know, the first 6 months that you're dating someone, both people are fucking lying.
It's full of shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're both trying to be the best version of themselves so that they can trick the other person into falling in love with them or being with them or some shit. Guys and girls do this. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is, after 6 months, the truth starts coming out and you start telling yourself, well, I don't want to break up with them because I've been with them for 6 months. And then you end up sticking with it and you end up wasting 2-3 years of your life because you fucking liked having sex with this person in the beginning and you thought they were cool.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So like, dude, we have to look beyond sexual compatibility. We have to look beyond looks. We have to look beyond, you know, what's cool now and think about it in the picture of our life. And I'm not saying you can't meet someone when you're young. I'm not saying you can't fall in love when you're young. But what I am saying is, for men, the quality of the woman you meet is likely, not in all cases, likely to be much higher once you have established yourself in your career and in your life. And the more time you spend fucking around with girls, the longer that takes to accomplish. Yeah. So I'm not saying you shouldn't date. I dated all through my 20s. I had a good time. I had fun. It was, you know, but looking back, I don't regret any of it. Okay. I'm just going to say that. But looking back, I did waste a lot of time that I probably could have gotten ahead faster had I not done that. Okay. So that's my take on it. And I know not everybody's going to agree, but like, it's America, bro. You're free to disagree. So this is a difficult situation for men because men are told their whole lives, usually by their mom, you know, to have manners, mm-hmm. buy flowers,
open the door,
and then like you go do this for girls, you know, when you're 20, 22 years old, you get fucking walked all over and made fun of and talked shit about and laughed at. My advice for this dude is you should take this and you should put it in that chip on your shoulder and you say, bro, I'm going to become so successful that there's nowhere that this fucking chick can look and not see my motherfucking face. All right. And that's the ultimate payback. The ultimate payback is becoming so motherfucking successful that they can't even look on the goddamn internet without seeing your motherfucking face and saying, damn. Yep. I fucked up.
I missed that one.
That's right.
Yeah, that's real shit. Anything on this you know, 22-year-old boss bitch? I don't know if that's like a new culture thing. I don't know what that is. I know boss bitches definitely exist. Do they exist at 22?
There's no boss anybody at 22. You don't know shit. Mm. You haven't done shit. No.
Yeah. So you probably actually...
Outside of the anomaly of... the Zuckerberg or the Kardashian or the pro athlete at 22. Usually you're shit at 22. Yeah. You're just getting started. And it's very difficult time for men because women are able to go date up. They're able to date older men who are 27, 30, 35 when they're 25. And that's pretty socially acceptable. I think it's weird, but it's pretty socially acceptable. And those dudes have means. Okay. Like, I had a girl one time tell me right to my fucking face, legitimately, you're never going to do what you say you're going to do. And she left me to go date a guy who was fucking 20 years older than me, who drove a fucking BMW 3 Series. And she thought he had fucking money. Okay. So I had a girl leave me over that.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. But you know what? I got fucking pissed off about it. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck that. Mm-hmm. And I went out and built shit. And now I feel good about myself. And I look back at that and I'm like, yeah, that wasn't a big deal. Fuck it. I don't give a shit. No. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't bother me. It's like, it is what it is. And I'm actually grateful for it because it lit a fire under my ass. It said, hey, this is what the fuck you got to do, man. You got to get your shit together. No. And I did. No. And you know, that's how you do it, bro. Here's the bottom line. You're never going to attract your best potential partner unless you are in your best situation. That goes for men and women. So when you're sitting there and you're saying, why can't I find anybody who's like this, 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 this? Go look in the fucking mirror. Are you any of those things? Are you any of those things? Because if you're not any of those things, you're not going to get that in return. People tend to match each other. Okay. So what do you have to offer? You know, I see all these fucking disgusting, fucking gross women online talking about, I want a man that makes $500,000. Bitch, you look like a fucking troll, okay? You're 5 foot and 5 foot wide talking this shit, okay? Like, this is real talk, man.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just keeping it real.
Yeah.
Like, and then you got dudes out here who don't have shit that think they're entitled to every chick. It goes both ways. The real shit is the reason you don't have it is because you ain't that. So if you want your best life and you want your best partner, you have to become the best that you can be first. And then those kind of people will find you. That's how it works, dude.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, guys, Andy, that was 4.
Yeah. Don't be a whore.
Yeah. We were sleeping on the floor. Now my jewelry box froze. Fuck a bowl, fuck a stove. Counted millions in a cold. Bad bitch, booted swole. Got her on bankroll. Can't fold. Just a no. Headshot, case closed.